Ari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Pri Raja Kacharya Stotara Sata Shri Shrimad His Divine Grace Aisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premsika Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dweta Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtana Ki Jai, Transcendental Book Distribution Ki Jai, Iskanu Raman Reti Dham Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Mudirayet. Nashta prayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Today we're reading from Canto 3, Chapter 15, text number 35. Tesham itiritam Ubhav Avadharya Goram. Teshami Tiritam Ubhav Avadharya Goram. Teshami Tiritam Ubhav Avadharya Goram. Tang Brahma Dandam Anivaranam Astra Pugahi. Sadyo harer anucharav uru bibhyatastat. Pada grahava patatam atikatarena. Tesham itiritam ubhav avadharya korang. tang brahma dandam anivaranam astrapu gahi. Sadyo harer anucharav urubhibhyatastat. Pada grahava patatam atikatarena. Tesham iti ratam bhav avadharya ghoram. Tang brahma dandam anivaranam astra pugahi. Sadyo harer anucharav urubhibhyatastat. Pada grahava patatam atikatarena. Tesham itiratam upav avadharya gorang. Tang brahma dandam anivaranam astrapugahi. Sadyo harer anucharav urubhibhyatastat. Pada grahava patatam atikatarena. Ladies? Desham itiritam upav avadharya koram. Tang brahma dandam anivaranam astrapugahi. Sadyo harer anucharav urubhibhyatastat. Padang karhava patatam atikatarena. Tesham itiritam upav avadharya ghoram. Tang brahma dandam anivaranam astrapugahi. Sadyo harer anucharav urubhibhyatastat. Pada grahava patatam atikatarena. Word meanings. Tesham, of the four kumaras. Iti, thus. Iritam, uttered. Ubhau, both doorkeepers. Avadharya, understanding. Koram, terrible. Tam, that. Brahmadandam, curse of a Brahmana. Anivaranam, not able to be counteracted. Astrapugahi, by any kind of weapon. Sadyaha, at once. Harehe, of the Supreme Lord. Anucharao, devotees. Uru, very much. Pibhyataha, became fearful. Tatpadagrahau, grasping their feet. Apatatam, fell down. Atikatarena, in great anxiety. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. When the doormen of Vaikuntha Loka, who were certainly devotees of the Lord, found that they were going to be cursed by the Brahmanas, they at once became very much afraid and fell down at the feet of the Brahmanas in great anxiety, for a Brahmana's curse cannot be counteracted by any kind of weapon. Please repeat after me. When the doormen of Vaikuntha Loka, who were certainly devotees of the Lord, found that they were going to be cursed by the Brahmanas, they at once became very much afraid and fell down at the feet of the Brahmanas in great anxiety, for a Brahmana's curse cannot be counteracted by any kind of weapon. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Although, by chance, the doorman committed a mistake by checking the Brahmanas from entering the gate of Vaikuntha, they were at once aware of the gravity of the curse. There are many kinds of offenses, but the greatest offense is to offend a devotee of the Lord. Because the doormen were also devotees of the Lord, they were able to understand their mistake and were terrified when the four Kumaras were ready to curse them. Om Ajnana Timarantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitang Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitang Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitangscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So a Brahmana's curse cannot be counteracted by any kind of weapon. This we're talking about qualified Brahmanas, not just someone who's born in the family of Brahmanas. In this Kali Yuga, not all the Brahmanas are so powerful as this. It's a good thing, because the way things go in Kali Yuga, people would be cursing each other all the time and having disastrous results. I think of road rage or what happens on social media sometimes. People, for some reason, want to hurt each other, even though there has not been only slight offense or mistakes. But these Brahmanas, the four Kumaras, were the first created sages, sons of Lord Brahma. They were so powerful they were able to remain as five-year-old children and avoid growing up and becoming involved in materialistic life. They were always fixed in Brahman realization, and here they were at the gates of Vaikuntha about to personally meet the Supreme Lord. So it's mentioned that they are devotees. And we have to be very careful not to offend devotees. Of the 10 offenses to the holy name, the first offense is to blaspheme devotees who've dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy name. It's only by the grace of devotees that we have any standing in devotional service. And it's by serving devotees that we get a taste for hearing about Krishna, and we get a taste for devotional service. Syan mahat sevaya vipra punya tirtana shevanat. And it's because the devotees are in the world that devotional service is being propagated. It's our mission to help Srila Prabhupada propagate devotional service throughout the world. And we have to be very careful to avoid conflicts among devotees that end up in offenses which can cause devotees to fall down. The mad elephant offense, to offend a great devotee, can be like an elephant that tramples the weeds. That tramples the creeper of devotional service, which we have to protect all around from different kinds of weeds and enemies. So we can water the creeper of devotional service with hearing and chanting, but we have to protect it from weeds like desire for fame and adoration. And if we offend devotees that it can completely set us back in devotional service. Curses are often found in these lila as the cause of something to happen. Different things happen by curses, and in this case is Lord Krishna's arrangement. He wants to appear as Lord Nrisingadev, as Lord Vraha, as Lord Rama, and as Lord Krishna, and kill these demons and fight with them and show how he protects his devotees. So this is an arrangement by him. Otherwise, we wouldn't expect these brahmanas to be so offended, and we wouldn't expect these doorkeepers who were there at the seventh gate in Vaikuntha to be make this kind of mistake. Nor would we expect a devotee to become in anxiety, even being cursed. It calls to mind the time of King Chitraketu when he laughed at Lord Shiva. He found it a humorous situation that Lord Shiva was instructing many deep philosophers, but he had his wife on his lap, and he laughed at that. Devi became offended, and immediately she cursed him to become a demon. And he just calmly accepted the curse, and Lord Shiva praised him, saying, Narayana parak sarve nakutashchana bibhyati swarga apavargyasya narakeshu apitulya tadarshanam. That just see these devotees, that they're when they're totally dedicated to Lord Narayan, they're not afraid of anything. They accept as heaven or hell or liberation with an equal vision like that. So it's interesting that these Vaikuntha gatekeepers, Vaikuntha is supposed to be the place with no anxiety, but it's described here, they became full of anxiety and full of fear. Devotees normally are free from fear. When a devotee gets cursed, often the devotee doesn't worry because they're simply meditating on Krishna, and Krishna protects them. And when a devotee gets an opportunity for a benediction, like we can see the example of Prahlad Maharaj, that his only concern, his biggest fear was just that he might be forgetful of Krishna. He was not afraid of Lord Nrisingadev, even though Lord Nrisingadev was so ferocious, but he was afraid of his external energy, which can always drag us into forgetfulness of Krishna, which is our real good fortune is remembering Krishna. And also he was concerned that he wanted that the fallen conditioned souls get an opportunity to hear and understand the glories of devotional service and the glories of Lord Nrisingadev. So he was concerned for them. The devotee doesn't want anything material for themselves. This is the character of the pure devotees. And Krishna is attracted to that character of the pure devotees. These two doorkeepers, Vaikuntha, as it turns out, as you will find out, they became demons, but they were always thinking of Krishna. That in the seventh canto, Narada Muni states that a demon can inimically think of Krishna even more intensely than a devotee does. Of course, we don't want to, we want our devotional service to be favorable and not inimical to Krishna. But this is the big concern. What does a devotee have to fear? To fear losing the association of devotees, to fear losing the recollection of Krishna, to fear losing the opportunity to develop our love for Krishna, which is the ultimate goal of life, Krishna prema. That's described as prayojana, the fruit that we're seeking is that love. And abhideya, the process for attaining love of Krishna, is this devotional service that we're performing. First, under regulations, we have so many things that we have to do. We've been reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, these 64 items. We rise early, we put on tilak, we worship the deity, we chant Hare Krishna, we attend the Bhagavatam class. There's so many things that Srila Prabhupada has given us to do. And in the beginning stage, whether we like it or not, we do it. And then we become attracted to it, and we start liking it, and we don't want to give it up. And we start to develop. These things are conducive to real feelings, spiritual feelings, devotional emotions. And then those feelings get stronger and more constant. And eventually, Hare Krishna. Eventually it blossoms into love of Krishna. And the pure devotees, like Srila Prabhupada, have such character that there's no difference between their desires and Krishna's desires. They only desire to do what Krishna wants. And it's described that if something is like would be like nectar to us, but Krishna doesn't want it, we consider it like poison. And if something would be like poison to us, but if Krishna wants it, we consider it like nectar. That's the standard of the great devotees, that they are completely one in their will, in their desire with Krishna. And because of that pure devotion, they actually capture Krishna's heart. Sometimes the curses are ultimately good for people. We heard this morning, Adikarta was reading about how sometimes Krishna, there will be some curse that someone will undergo, some humiliation, and then it would be the finishing touch for them to become pure devotees. We think of the Narada Muni cursed the sons of Kuvera, Naligriva and Manakuvara, who were drunk, and they were enjoying in the heavenly planets in the water with women, and the women, at least when they saw the sage, they covered themselves, but these sons were such drunkards that even in front of Narada Muni, they remained naked, and he said, okay, I curse you to stand as trees, but they stood as the twin Arjuna trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And after this phase of suffering and humiliation for them, they were able to see Krishna face to face. Krishna pulled them down, and they were able to become fully liberated devotees of Lord Krishna. Krishna generally protects his devotees, his pure devotees. In the pastime of Ambarish Maharaj, he said, not just my pure devotees, but even the devotees of my devotees. I protect. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, he says, "Yomang pashati sarvatra pashang samang chamayi pashati tasyahang na pranashyami sachame na pranashyati." And in the ninth chapter also. So he says, the one who sees Krishna everywhere, everything in Krishna, one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, he's never lost to me and I'm never lost to him. And in the ninth chapter, he says, you know, even if a devotee performs abominable activities, if the devotee is an Anya Bhak, you know, steadily remains in devotional service, then quickly he gains righteousness. He says, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. My devotee never perishes. The same word, napranashyati. So Ambarish Maharaj, he was king of the entire world, all the seven islands. He was extremely opulent, but he didn't care at all for any material possessions. He considered it insignificant. He saw everything as Krishna's property and that he was just a servant of Krishna. He engaged his mind in thinking of Krishna, his hands in cleaning the temple and doing other such devotional activities, his sense of taste in tasting prasadam, his sense of sight in seeing the deities, his sense of smell in smelling the lotus feet of Krishna and the tulsi leaves that are offered there. He touched the bodies of the devotees with his sense of touch. He was fully absorbed in devotional service constantly. And in order to please Lord Vishnu, he performed a great sacrifice. He and his very qualified wife, they actually observed a Ekadashi fast for 2 years. They observed the Ekadashi fast and did all the proper things to make a wonderful sacrifice. And at the end of the fasting for the last few days, they didn't eat anything or even drink any water, and they remunerated all the priests with millions of cows. Each cow had a calf, and they had gold and so forth. And just at the time when he was to break the fast, which was necessary to perform the sacrifice, then Durvasa Muni came. She considered it very auspicious. He invited the Brahmana to come. This was the proper etiquette, the proper culture, that the brahmana should be invited to have a meal. And of course, the brahmana should eat first before the king. And so Durvasa Muni graciously accepted the invitation. This was in Braj, in Madhuban, where this pastime was taking place. And Durvasa Muni went to bathe in the river Jamuna. And he was taking his time bathing, and it was the last muhurta, and the time was running out for when Ambarish Maharaj could break the fast. And so he was in a dilemma. If he ate something, that would be offensive to the brahmana. It would be a transgression of etiquette. But if he didn't eat anything, then the whole sacrifice that he'd been doing for 2 years would be spoiled. So he consulted with his wise advisors and things. And Krishna gave him the intelligence in his heart to recall that in the Vedas it said that drinking water can be considered eating or it can be considered not eating. So he decided if he drinks water, then he would be breaking the fast, and at the same time he wouldn't be offending the brahmana. That was the idea. His advisors agreed with that, because when the time was really running out, he drank a little bit of water. He and his wife drank some water. So Durvasa Muni came back and immediately understood what had happened and became furious. That you invited me to eat. I'm a Brahmin. You know, you ate before me and transgressed the etiquette. This is insulting to me. And he tried to destroy Ambarish Maharaj. He pulled a tuft of hair from his head, and with his brahminical tejas, he created a big fiery demon that came to attack Maharaj Ambarish. But Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra was given to Maharaj Ambarish, actually. He was always there to protect this great devotee. So immediately the chakra, and Krishna could see past, present, and future. He would know what was going to happen. So the chakra destroyed the demon and went chasing after Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni went everywhere. He tried to hide in a cave, and the Sudarshan kept chasing him. He went underwater. He went into outer space, into different planets, and into different caves, and he couldn't hide from the Sudarshan chakra. He finally went to Lord Brahma, and he said, "Please save me from this fiery chakra." And Lord Brahma said, "This is Vishnu's chakra. At the time of the end of the universe, all the sages and me, all the upadevatas, we all have to surrender to Krishna. We don't have any power to protect you from this chakra." So then he went to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva said, "My dear son, you know, Lord Brahma and I, we're all subordinate to Krishna by his will. Simply by willing, all the planets are being created and destroyed. I don't have power to protect you from the chakra. You should go to Vaikuntha. Maybe Krishna will protect you." So he went to Vaikuntha and pled at the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, "You know, please protect me from your terrible burning chakra." And then Lord Narayan said, "Actually, I have no independence. I'm completely owned by my pure devotees. That they only think about me. I only think about them. They're in my heart, and I'm in their hearts. And I would advise you to go take shelter of Ambarish Maharaj. I'm not independent. I can't protect you from that." So the Durvasa Muni went back to Ambarish Maharaj to humbly pray for forgiveness. And it turns out he was gone for a whole year. And Ambarish Maharaj and his wife, during that whole time, they hadn't eaten anything. They just were just living on water, waiting for Durvasa Muni to come back. And immediately Ambarish Maharaj accepted him, forgave him, fed him very sumptuously, and Durvasa Muni was very impressed by the devotional service of Ambarish Maharaj. So this shows that the power of a devotee is greater than the power of a mystic yogi or a Brahmin who's not a devotee. The yogis develop power by controlling their mind and senses, by their austerities, by their cleanliness, truthfulness, and all these qualities of Brahman as they develop powers. But the actual control of the senses what's it for? It's to properly use the senses. And the senses are supposed to be used in the service of Krishna, not just to be restrained. I attended a class maybe 15 years ago or something. Jayadvaita Swami was giving a class at Silicon Valley, actually before we even got the temple there. And he talked about this verse about, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Kormonganiva Sarvasha, that Indriyan Indriyarte Pyas, that the yogi should be able to withdraw his senses like a tortoise withdraws his limbs within a shell. And he said that he read other Bhagavad Gitas before he read Prabhupada's commentary. And he didn't understand why was the yogi like some kind of neurotic tortoise. I remember he said this neurotic tortoise who was afraid of everything and he was pulling his senses in. And when he read Srila Prabhupada's purport, he was saying that, no, he withdraws his senses when there's no opportunity for service. There's nothing to engage them in beneficially for Krishna's service, and then he can extend his senses to use them in devotional service when it's called for devotional service. So the devotees, they properly control their senses automatically by engaging their senses in devotional service rather than in artificially or mechanically learning to control their senses through breath control and different techniques, asanas and so forth. Therefore, it's much safer. Devotees like yogis like Durvasa Muni, they can acquire powers that they're liable to misuse. But devotees' powers are greater. But the devotees' powers come commensurate with their reluctance or unwillingness to misuse them. And it's impossible for devotees controlling his senses just to serve Krishna. That's the proper use. So he doesn't acquire powers and go off cursing people inappropriately. So in the story of Ambarish Maharaj, it demonstrates how a pure devotee actually has greater powers than the greatest yogi. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yoginam api sarvesham, madgatena antaratmana shradhavan bhajate yomam sameyuktatamo mahataha. That the yogi who's the most linked with him in yoga is the devotee. And that's the highest yoga, is devotional service. This is the ultimate, the goal of the yoga ladder. So is to come up to the platform of bhakti and then develop Krishna prema. And so Srila Prabhupada, we're all very fortunate that we've come in contact with this movement that is offering us the ultimate goal. Not everyone knows who the ultimate Supreme Personality of Godhead is. Not everyone knows what the ultimate goal is. But we've come to this Hare Krishna movement, and we know that the goal is love of Krishna, and the means to attain the goal is chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in our devotional service and helping Srila Prabhupada spread this ISKCON mission around the world. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing it like we're doing now. And so we're very, very fortunate. And we don't have to be afraid. And like Krishna says when he told Durvasa Muni that he couldn't protect him from the Sudarshan Chakra because he belongs to his devotees, he also said, even to the devotee of my devotee. Like that. So even though we should be very careful not to offend, especially great Mahabhagavata devotees, we should also be very careful not to offend the neophyte devotees in our movement. We're a preaching movement. We're trying to attract people to come. When they enter our society, we should keep that mood of wanting to attract people to stay and to develop. And we should be happy when we see devotees making advancement and becoming happy in Krishna consciousness, and we shouldn't be jostling with them for a position in our society and causing conflict or bad feelings or curses and counter-curses. That's another example of curses was the Daksha sacrifice in the fourth canto when Lord Shiva didn't stand up to receive his father-in-law and the Brahmanas, those in support of Daksha began cursing Lord Shiva and his followers, and they started counter-cursing. And they were actually ended up being even more powerful in that case. But here, the brahmanas, the four kumaras, were more powerful, and we could see that the reaction of the doorkeepers, Jai and Vijay, that they immediately understood that, they had made a mistake, and now they were going to get cursed. They were being properly chastised, and they became fearful and full of anxiety and fell at the feet of the four kumaras to beg forgiveness. So let's have some discussion at this point. I know it's a little early. Jai Bahushara Prabhu.
Thank you, Karanath Prabhu. Thank you. Nice class. It's mentioned in the Puranas that demons take birth as brahmanas in Kali Yuga. So one time Jai Satchinanda, he mentioned that to one brahmana in Jagannath Puri, and then the brahmana got angry and started chasing him.
Yeah, so, I forget, is it the Garuda Purana or the Korma Purana or something? Yeah. It's in the purport in the first canto that actually when Krishna was present and all the people were being killed, all these demons were being killed in the battlefield and stuff, that not all of them, Krishna liberated them when he killed them. You know, in Kurukshetra, he was just present, non-combatant, but not everybody got the benefit to be killed by Krishna and be liberated. But at least they got the benefit that Krishna was present, so they got the benediction that even though they were demons, they became Brahman, born in Brahman families in Kali Yuga. That's mentioned there in one of the Puranas. And yeah, thanks for reminding us of that. Not that we should, I mean, we have so many wonderful people in our movement from Brahmin families who are really showing us what the qualities of real Brahmins are like. But.
Also, there's a quote here from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 8, text 28 purport. One may be a highly learned Brahmana, but if he is not a pure devotee, he is a vijatiya, an outcast, one outside devotional service. In other words, a non-devotee.
Yeah, so these are some of the principles of devotional service. We should give up the association of non-devotees, even if they're highly qualified by, you know, moral character. If they're not devotees, we should give up their association. And one of the principles is that we should be very intolerant of blasphemy of the Lord and his devotees. And so we should learn these principles and take them very seriously. And be very careful not to offend a devotee. The character of devotees is so exalted because Krishna says, Yeyetamang prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajamyaham. As they surrender to him, he rewards them accordingly. So we're in the material world, most people are neglectful of Krishna, and they want other things, and they worship demigods and so forth to attain things that really come from Krishna alone, but are, because they're material things, they're just temporary and meager. But the devotees are those who actually want to have established a loving relationship with Krishna, and he responds to them by having a loving relationship with them. And he is really the basis of everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, the devotee can see that he's not different from everything, because everything's resting on his energy, like pearls are strung on a thread. Matak paratarang nanyat kinchidasti tananjaya mayi sarvamidang protang sutre manigana iva. Everything is resting on him. So the devotees see him everywhere. They see him in his energies. They see him in the sun and the moon, in the fragrance of the earth and the taste of water. Devotees, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santaksadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti. They see him in their heart of hearts. So we should strive to achieve that level of devotional service where wherever we go, whatever we see, we're always remembering Krishna and seeing how Krishna is present everywhere. He's the super soul within every atom, within everyone's heart. He's personally present. Like who was saying, was it Jayadvaita Swami, I think, was saying that Goloka is pervading the entire universe. Was it Jayadvaita Swami or Shivaram Swami? Or? Huh. That the Goloka pervades the material universe as well. So Krishna's present everywhere. For those of us who have the eyes to see, we in this movement, we're trying to follow the practice, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity, trying to develop that love that will give us that vision of seeing Krishna everywhere. And then Krishna's poshanam, his merciful protection, is there available for his devotees, or even for the devotees of his devotees, as he says in the ninth canto. Someone, you had a comment? I'm sorry.
No, I just had a question. You mentioned how someone's not practicing devotional service. They like retract their senses just by some mechanical mental means. But the person, devotee, they're doing that by doing devotional service. And so in that way, their senses are controlled. But I find in my practice that like when I'm doing some service, maybe I'm not fully engaged. And so my senses are still elsewhere. And so I was wondering, like, do we have to learn the mechanical mental means of retracting my senses so that I can practice devotional service, or do I have to feel more absorbed in my service? And how do I even feel more absorbed in my service when I'm doing all the mechanics of devotional service?
No, we don't have to do any Ashtanga yoga, or we don't have to, I mean, some devotees may do some of those things just for health reasons or things like that, but devotional service, chanting of the holy name, is so powerful that it will forcibly drag us. It's said that a child of a cat and a child of a monkey, they're carried in two different ways. The monkey has to hold onto his mother's back and be carried around, but the mother cat just picks up her kitten with her teeth and drags and takes it. So the devotees are like that. The devotees are like the kittens. That these practices of devotional service that we do are so powerful. Of course, we have to, you know, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we should withdraw. You know, we've seen our mind wandering. We should bring it back to listen to the holy name. It's an offense to be inattentive while chanting. It's an offense to remain even after understanding so many instructions, to not have complete faith in the holy name and to maintain material attachments. So there is some endeavor that we're required to do, but the practice that we're doing is much, much more powerful than the practice of mystic yoga. It's leads to a better result, and it's easier. Sometimes people say, oh, devotional service, bhakti yoga, that's for the women and the shudras and the people who can't do the really hard stuff. They're not great philosophers that are, you know, able to use rigorous logic and study and know the grammar very well and study the Vedanta Sutra very well or whatever. And Prabhupada says, well, if it's easier, why take the hard path? But actually to do it right is not, to do it right and do it successfully is not as easy as you might think. So it's true that, you know, we may be distracted in the beginning stages. We have to do our, like I was saying before, we have to do our routine work, as Srila Prabhupada called it, our deity worship, our attending classes, discussions, our chanting of our rounds, our, you know, all of our service that we're prescribed duties that we do, we have to do them very carefully, even if we're not very much attracted to it. But, you know, the reason we're here and the reason we're doing it, we've all got some little taste already. You know, we've already got some attraction to it. And that taste should increase as we become free from being distracted by material engagements and degrading activities. You know, the senses are dangerous. Like they said, they're like the snake, the fangs of serpent, you know, that the senses may drag us into these, like the four prohibitions, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. You know, can be very, very destructive to our, you know, even living a clean, decent life. And yet people are being dragged into those things by their senses. But for devotees who are using their senses in regulated devotional service, it's said like the fangs of the serpent are broken and they don't have to be fearful anymore because the senses are, because we're happily enjoying our engagements in devotional service, it will come that we'll become happily, so happy to engage in our devotional service, we will become addicted to it. We won't, if we go somewhere where we can't go to Mangalartik in the morning, we'll become very agitated, like, oh, I want to go to Mangalartik. We'll do Mangalartik in our mind. The devotees in Mumbai or Bombay in those days, there was, you know, a fight over the Juhu temple, and a bunch of the devotees got arrested. There was like the guy who was trying to take back the land, he sent tough guys to come and chase them and fight them, you know, and stuff. And in the course of that, one of the guards that the devotees hired killed somebody, and they arrested the devotees and were making a big deal out of it. And His Holiness Sridhar Swami was in jail with these other devotees in this, you know, very filthy Bombay jail, and they were doing their whole program in their mentally, you know, a deity can be made of wood, paint, jewels, metal, you know, stone, like that. So it can be made of mind also. So he had a mental deity, and they were all having their mental deity, and they're having their mental arati ceremony, and they were doing all their, in the prison, they were doing all their devotional service there because they were so attached to it and so happy. He was, and Sridhar Swami was one of our great God brothers, known as the Jolly Swami. He was happy and, you know, very dedicated and very, but he was always prosecuting his preaching activities very happily like that. It was a wonderful devotee to know. But yeah, so we have to endeavor. It's not that it's without any endeavor, but we don't have to take up pranayama, and we don't have to take up yogic asanas, and we don't have to take up karmakanda, Vedic sacrifices. But Prabhupada encouraged us to try to reestablish the culture of the Varnashram system. He also wrote sometimes that it might not be possible in this age. The six Goswamis emphasize this Pancharatrika system of spiritual initiation and deity worship and so forth as a method for becoming totally purified. Although it would be nice if the whole society, the whole culture could be Krishna-centered and spiritual-centered. But how to do that, it seems like it's a long way off. At least to me, I don't have a clear vision of how we're going to. Prabhupada asked us to divide our society into four varnas, and we have to, you know, earn a living honestly, and at the same time, continue to properly respect spiritual principles and properly deal with each other in a nice way. So we're supposed to give an example for how that's done. It's Krishna's arrangement. How it's done. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, a lot of them would be Babaji's and not have a Brahmin thread and not become sannyasis and carry a staff. And, you know, because the idea was they were above that system, Paramahansas. But Bhaktisiddhanta pointed out that a lot of them were imitating the dress and, you know, supposedly imitating the lifestyle of the Haridas Thakur and the other great, and the six Goswamis, the other great devotees, but they weren't even following the principles. A lot of them would have girlfriends or smoke hash or whatever they were doing. So he's established this sannyasi ashram and wanted to reestablish the principles of a ordered society where four regular principles strictly are followed and people are guided by, you know, the intellectuals of society have actual spiritual knowledge and can guide people in understanding the conclusion of the Vedas, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic wisdom like that. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the nectarine of life. Hari Om. Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, thank you Prabhu for the class. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he acknowledged that in his quite old age, he couldn't remember anything. He couldn't think properly. He couldn't speak. Nothing was functioning. He said, somehow or another, I go on writing. This is a great wonder. Now, for the rest of us, and it's a fact that when I joined this, the hippies, they said, never trust anyone over 30. And the fact is that we had someone like, of course he was on the West Coast, but someone like Jayananda Prabhu was like getting close to 30, was considered, he was an exception. But generally, we didn't relate to older people. But now the time factor is move forward, and many of us were approaching 80 years old. In my own case, I have 78 already gone. So, and we don't have the power of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. So do you have anything to say about how we could compensate or cope with the weakening of our physical and mental faculties as we, you know, approach 80? Some devotees have even passed that earmark. I know that there's so many younger people listening to this class on the radio, and YouTube and all that. But maybe you have a few words of advice for those of us who are over the hill. And I don't mean Govardhan Hill. I mean just over the hill.
I'm reminded of the pastime of the passing away of Haridas Thakur. Of course, he's an exception. But the older devotees have been serving all their lives. They're very fortunate that they should be able to remember Krishna. Haridas Thakur was chanting whatever it was, 190-something rounds every day. And but then when he, what did someone say the exact number? 192 rounds a day. And then at some point, you know, he was older than Lord Chaitanya, and he was from the older generation, and he was feeling like he couldn't finish his rounds. He also didn't want to witness Lord Chaitanya's departure. He wanted to depart first. And but I think that devotees who've been practicing their whole lives, they're very fortunate that they do have an attraction and recollection of Krishna, even if they don't have the strength and vigor to do what they used to do when they were young. There was one, I was impressed on Dandavats many years ago. Niranjana Swami went to visit a lady devotee who had Alzheimer's, and she was living in an assisted care facility or something like that. And she couldn't remember who anyone was or anything like that. But all she could remember was she would sing to the Tulsi Devi tune, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. And all the people in the facility there, the nurses and everything, used to sing her tune, her Hare Krishna tune with her and everything. And this was her, you know, that even though she had lost her ability to discriminate about who people were or anything like that, she remembered Krishna. So we just keep doing our service, and Krishna will protect us in our old age. You know, of course, there's the famous prayer by King Kulashekar, Krishna Twadiya Pada Pankaja Panjarantam Atyaiva Vishitu Me Manasa Raja Hang Saprana Prayana Samaye Kapavata Pitao Kantavaro Dana Vidho Smarane Kutastvam. He said, now that, you know, while I'm remembering you now, and we're in ecstasy remembering you, that he compared his mind to the king of swans. And sometimes swans get tangled up. They go down to whatever they do, fishing and things like that. They get their necks caught up in the roots of lotus plants, and they drown that way. So he said, let the swan of my mind become entangled in the roots of this lotuses of your feet, and so I can die now while I'm remembering you, because it, at the time of my old age, when my voice is choked up with mucus and so forth, I might not be able to pronounce your holy name. So this was his prayer. But of course, we should just keep... One time I was out doing book distribution in I don't remember whether it was Calgary or Edmonton, Canada, in the winter, in the Christmas marathon, and it was like 40 below zero outside. And I went into the Hudson Bay Company, and I was sneaking, trying to sell books inside the store, and some store guard, big guy, caught me and put me in a headlock and dragged me into the back room. And they got the cops in, and they took me into jail. And then I was in jail, and there were a bunch of American Indians there, Canadian-American Indians. And I was chanting Hare Krishna, and they were saying, "What are you doing?" And they were chanting Hare Krishna too. I was teaching them. And then one of the jailers said, "We got another one. What should we do with him?" "Oh, put him in with his friend." So they took my Sankirtan leader, Judy Dar, down and put him in the cell with me. And he was preaching to me, and he said, "Akrarnath," he said, "these material bodies are just like an old plow. You use it until you can't use it anymore, and then you get rid of it," you know, like that. So, you know, if we keep using our bodies in devotional service, eating prasadam, our body becomes spiritualized, and our future is very fortunate. And you know the story of it's in the Mahabharata, the sage was going and blessing different people, and he saw the son of a king, and he said, "Never die." And he saw the son of a yogi, and he said, "Die immediately." And then he saw a sadhu devotee, and he said, "You can die or don't die." And then he saw a hunter, a butcher, and he said, "Don't live, don't die." But the devotees have that, we don't have to be afraid of death. For a sober person is not bewildered by a change of death. We're still changing bodies in this lifetime, and we'll just go on. And, you know, the more we can remember Krishna, the more assured we'll be that we'll be engaged in devotional service in our future lives. That's the biggest fear, is to be forgetful of Krishna, become an animal again and not even be able to practice any spiritual practices and things like that. But Bahushara Prabhu.
Yeah, in relation to what Maharaj is saying is that Paradeya, I don't know if he's our godbrother who just passed away a few days ago, but he had dementia, a certain type of dementia, but he would chant japa on his fingers. And then when Ramachandra's appearance day came, then he would be calling out, you know, "Ram, Ram." And so in that way, even though he had dementia and he was bedridden, he could still chant japa on his fingers. And then every so often he would come out and make a statement of Krishna consciousness. So all those years of preaching and training and doing japa, even in dementia, he was able to, you know, chant Hare Krishna on his fingers and make voice calls every so often, "Krishna, Krishna."
Yeah, the process really works. This process of devotional service is powerful, and it works. As they say in 12-step programs, the program works if you work it. Jayananda was said to have, before he had a diagnosis, and he decided not to undergo the cancer treatments, rather to use the money to help Srila Prabhupada publish Nectar Devotion, among other things. And but it said that, you know, shortly before he left, he sat up and said, "This process really works." Bhakti Tirtha Swami, you know, he had his leg was amputated. He had cancer of the spine, I think. It was in great pain. You could see there's videos of him chanting and with a big smile on his face. And even though he was like shaking practically with this pain that he was going through, one time he was sitting days before he left his body in Gita Nagari with Radhanath Swami, and they were chanting Hare Krishna, and he said, "You know, Radhanath Swami, it doesn't get any better than this." You know, his leg was gone and he was going to die, but he was in ecstasy. Like that. So this process really works. The more, you know, the more we can do in this lifetime. But we shouldn't think, I think it was Chitraleka, somebody in one of the videos, the memory videos, they remembered how a little girl had died. in Siddhanta's memory videos. And they went to Prabhupada and they were looking for someone, like Prabhupada would say, oh, well, she surely went back to Godhead or something like that. And Prabhupada, I mean, even when Jayananda passed away, he said, if he was remembering Krishna at the time of death, he didn't want to make it like it's... Bhaktivedanta Swami recently wrote a paper, a very thoughtful paper, about how we don't want to make this into some religion. It's really a science of spiritual science, and that, you know, if we... to the extent we become Krishna conscious, to that extent we will go on to a better destination in our next life. And but it really works. But it's a science, we have to apply it. It's not a matter of just joining a religion or joining a movement or an organization and then feeling like that's saved us. It's actually a process by which we do change our hearts through this Krishna consciousness movement. And to the extent that we take advantage of what Prabhupada has offered us, these classes, these books, these deities, this devotee association, this Harinam Sankirtan and book distribution and all these things, deity worship, to that extent, we don't have to fear old age. There's a great verse in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that says, Ayur Harati Vaipungsam Udhyanastancha Yanaso Tasyarte Yakshana Anita Uttama Shloka Vartanam, that every time the sun rises and it sets, it takes away one day from the life of a human being, except for those who spend their time glorifying the Lord who's praised with transcendental poetry, choice selected verses like that. In other words, except for those who are engaged, like we're engaged now in discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, that for us, time doesn't become a dangerous factor. You know, Krishna appears as universal form in the Bhagavad Gita. It's very, very frightening. I am time and I'm destroying everything. I'm going to kill all the soldiers. And Arjuna becomes very, very frightened. But for the devotee, Krishna comes in a much more pleasant form, a much more beautiful form that even the devas desire to see and can't easily see. It's only by pure devotional service that we can see that form of Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay. Oh, one more. Bahushara has one more point. We have another 1 minute.
So all you former devotees of Los Angeles Temple, there was an early pujari there, Ram Dass.
Yes.
And after he passed away, he appeared in the dream of three different devotees. It said, never give up chanting. Hare Krishna.
Jai. Jai. Yeah, there's so many wonderful devotees in this movement. Ram Dass was an ideal head pujari. He was always engaging everyone. This is the job of the head pujari, is not to like see that, you know, I own the deity, nobody can come. It's to let people be engaged in coming to see the deity and how the deity is being worshipped and taking the prasadam and everything. He was a great devotee. Hare Krishna. Jai.